Luke Skywalker stared out into the darkness. Plasma bolts filled the air with an orange glow, and more often than he wanted to acknowledge, exploded something. Fiery wreckage would tumble from the sky and scatter fire and debris across the ground, doing some damage, but generally only illuminating the horde of ground troops coming at the refugee base. Luke reached out with the Force to gauge the distance to the front and could feel the line of Yuuzhong Vong soldiers coming in only 500 meters distant. Beyond that line, fighters made strafing runs on the ground troops. Luke caught flashes of pain from those who died, but not a whit of anxiety or fear from the survivors. They're marching to their deaths, uncaring or unable to care about what will happen to them. When the Yuuzhong Vong soldiers reached the 200-meter mark, the troopers started shooting. Red bolts lanced out, striking silhouettes. At 100 meters, the Yuuzhong Vong troops began to run forward. The troopers still struck their targets, but gaps in the lines filled immediately as the wave of Yuuzhong Vong soldiers rushed ever closer. Smaller and stockier than the Vong warriors Luke had fought, these troops looked reptilian like Trandoshans, but more compact. A pair of calcifications sprouted from their foreheads, and Luke suspected it was through these that the Yuuzhong Vong controlled them. Large ground vehicles began pulsing plasma against shuttle shields and base fortifications. The shots blasted the fortifications apart, scattering troopers and, worse yet, opening gaps in the line that allowed the Yuuzhong Vong troops to pour into the compound. Luke sprinted to the nearest gap and ignited his lightsaber. The green blade hissed and spat as he cut right and left, chopping down the reptilian troopers. Because he could feel the slave troops through the Force, killing them proved easy. He knew where they would be, what they wanted to do. He wasn't fighting troops as much as he was battling for time. If killing each one took 3 seconds or 5, he couldn't possibly stop them all. Meter by meter, he was being driven back by the sheer weight of the assault. Before either Corrin or Ganner could offer a new plan for escape, an explosion outside shook the giant shell building. The cloying odor of Kilsent wafted in and down the stairs. All around him, Corrin could feel slash rats gathering, coursing through the sand, looking for any morsel of food. Panic rose among the slaves, but one by one their weakening sense in the Force ended. Corrin slipped past Ganner and ignited his lightsaber. Okay, Ganner, here's the new plan. You're the telekinesis champ here, so you float the students to the rear of this shell, carve yourself an exit with your lightsaber, and get them out. You can't possibly think in your state that you can beat these two. Immaterial, isn't it? Corrin gave Ganner as hard a stare as he could. You're the only one who can save them, and I'm the only one who can buy you the time you need to do it. Go. The younger Jedi Knight nodded once, then gestured, and the two students rose from the floor. Corrin twirled his silver lightsaber blade around in a humming circle, then moved to interpose himself between the Yuuzhong Vong and Ganner's line of retreat. I hope you two think this is a good day to die. The lead Yuuzhong Vong let his amphistaff coil itself around his waist. He stepped to the side and waved the second warrior forward. The other Vong, whom Corrin thought of as the younger, came in with a sweeping slash at Corrin's left leg. Corrin blocked the cut low. The tip of his lightsaber sliced through the shell floor with ease, leaving a blackened scar between the two of them. Corrin held the lightsaber's hilt up near his right ear, with the blade pointing straight forward. He leveled it at the Vong's eyes, then gave the alien a nod. You want me? Come get me. The Yuuzhong Vong took a step forward, and Corrin twisted his lightsaber's throttle assembly around. The energy beam went from silver to purple, then more than doubled in length. The blade's tip stabbed deep through the younger Vong's eye socket. The Yuuzhong Vong fell back with smoke rising from his skull. He clattered to the shell floor, twitched once, and lay still. The elder Yuuzhong Vong pulled both hands up above his head. His amphistaff straightened itself into a spear, with its head flattening out into a thin blade. Corrin returned the lightsaber to its normal length and crouched low. They waited. Both of them were trained warriors facing a skilled foe. Only one of them would walk away at best. Corrin suspected he would not be the one. Images of his wife and children surfaced in his brain. He wondered if the Yuuzhong Vong warrior was thinking the same thing. And then the Vong attacked. Corrin parried. then lunged with his hissing blade. The Vong slipped to the right, trailing smoke from where the blade caught the armor over his right hip. Then he slashed back with his amphistaff. The tip caught Corrin on the thigh, slicing through clothes and flesh, spraying blood up onto the walls. Corrin whirled, shunting the pain aside. The Yuuzhan Vong slashed with a backhanded cut at his knees. The Jedi leapt above it, then sliced down at the Vong's left elbow as it flashed past. The silver blade pierced the leathery joint and scored flesh, winning a hiss and a small black rivulet of blood from the Vong. The two combatants backed off for a second, each eyeing the other. They set themselves. The Yuuzhan Vong again raised his amphistaff above his head. Corrin lowered the tip of his blade, letting it point at one of the Vong's knees. He drew in a deep breath, then shifted his shoulders. This is it. War cries echoed within the chamber as each fighter sprinted across the floor at his foe. Corrin ducked his head, letting the amphistaff flash past over his shoulder. His lightsaber slipped into the space between the Yuuzhan Vong's knees, then split the armored joint at the Vong's right hip. Corrin sawed the blade forward and back once, lifting as he went, then spun away to the left. Inexplicably, his spin went out of control and he crashed to the ground. He felt a moment of pain in his back. Then his legs went numb. He saw the Yuuzhan Vong's amphistaff hissing and flashing fangs. He knew in an instant what had happened. He reached behind his back and felt the nasty bite mark. His hand came away slick with blood. Venom, too, I have no doubt. The numbness is spreading. The Yuuzhan Vong pushed with his hands and almost made it upright, but his right leg swung awkwardly around. He started to crawl toward Corrin. The Jedi Knight slashed at him with the silver lightsaber, but the Vong seemed undaunted by Corrin's weak attacks. He knows the venom will get me. Corrin already felt the numbness spreading up his back. It was becoming harder for him to breathe. Corrin pushed himself back, leaving a bloody red smear on the floor. He reached out through the Force in one last desperate gamble. The Yuuzhan Vong warrior stared down at him, uneven features giving Corrin a nightmare image to carry with him into eternity. Then a frenzied explosion of slash rats burst up through the holes Corrin had gouged in the shell's floor. One of the toothy rodents sank its teeth into the Vong's left forearm, crushing it as if it were an eggshell. Yes, the Vong screamed, and Corrin decided he never would have. The sounds of snarling slash rats fighting over his body drowned it out completely. With a smile on his face, Corrin pushed himself back as best he could from the kill balls that were feasting on the Yuuzhan Vong warriors. He had reached out with the Force to summon the slash rats for a Yuuzhan Vong meal. The snarling, growling packs showed how effective that strategy had been. Corrin laughed to himself and laid his head down. Of course, now I'm dessert. He exhaled slowly and closed his eyes before the creeping numbness would rob him of the ability to do even so simple a task. For a moment, he wondered if he would fade from existence upon death, as had other Jedi, robbing the slash rats of their food. No matter. The others are safe and away. My work here is done. Before the numbness consumed him completely, he felt himself floating. So this is it. This is what it is like to die a Jedi and fade into nothingness. Though he gave no external sign, his spirit felt buoyed, and Corrin Horn passed into black oblivion, a happy man. Anakin called out for his brother.
Jason! Jason!
He turned to his left as he heard a reply, then lashed at the crowd of reptoids swarming over his brother. Bleeding from the nose and mouth, with his left eye slowly swelling shut, Jason regained his feet. All around them, the reptoids swarmed over the ramparts. It seemed less a military force than a swarm of insects pouring into the camp. Above them, Elegos shuttled impervious swoops and poured gouts of fire into the masked soldiery. The Kamasi's action thinned the ranks between the Jedi and the refugees and gained them some breathing room. Jason and Anakin broke into the refugee compound and fended off more reptoids, but those that had gotten through had already wrought havoc. Blaster-burnt reptoid bodies lay everywhere, splashed with the blood of their victims. Children lay broken, and men and women stared sightlessly up at the bellies of the freighters beneath which they huddled. Moans and screams filled the area. Leia ran through her tongues. Eligo says the second half of the Yuuzhan Vong host is still coming. She pointed at the freighters. We have to get everyone aboard and off of Dantooine as fast as we can. We've precious little time before we all die. Jaina Solo rolled her X-Wing to port and leveled out for a ground attack strafing run. Gavin's voice crackled as it came through the comm unit.
Rogues, we have a new assignment. The freighters are lifting off. We have them outbound. Each one of you picks up a freighter. Assignment's coming now.
Jaina saw that she'd been attached to the Impervious, which she didn't mind, but it was the sixth ship in the convoy. Sparky, give me a rundown on which rogues are still operational. The R5 droid came back with a grim report. The squadron as a whole had been cut in half. Jaina keyed her comm. Do we have outbound coordinates, Colonel?
Solution in progress, Styx.
Sparky whistled and fed the solution to Jaina's secondary monitor. Agamar! Just where we wanted to head anyway. And the outbound vector is coming up just on the other side of the pole. The droid shrilled and Jaina looked out her viewport. Coming up over the edge of Dantooine's disk, sitting in the outbound vector for Agamar, was a Yuuzhan Vong cruiser. The cruiser was again employing its Dovin Basals to create a gravitic anomaly strong enough to prevent any ship from making the jump to hyperspace. This is Rogue 11. We have a Yuuzhan Vong cruiser acting as an interdictor again. We're going nowhere. In the cockpit of the shuttle Impervious, Leia stood between the seats her brother and Eligos occupied. Jaina's right. That will stop us from traveling away from here. In the distance, red-gold plasma bolts started flying lazily toward the convoy. All the shots passed high. The intent of the gunners seemed clearly to be to herd the ships back down to Dantooine. Leia shivered. If we try to run, we die up here. If we don't, we die down there. Either way, we're dead. The sensor console beeped. Eligos glanced at it, then cocked his head. Something coming out of hyperspace. Something big. The reversion to real space for the Rauruse occurred several seconds sooner than Admiral Trefe had intended. In the instant the white tunnel through which his ship had been traveling began to fall apart, he knew at least one Yuuzhan Vong cruiser had made itself into an interdictor. The only reason for this could be to prevent the escape of the ships that had been grounded there. He glanced over at his weapons control officer.
Tell the Kuruska fire to let go with everything they have. Fire for effect what we have as well.
A tremor ran through the Ralrus as the 20 proton torpedo launchers on board spat out their deadly missiles. The Kuruska fire, which was an old Victory-class star destroyer, likewise launched all the concussion missiles it had available. 80 rockets spiraled in at the Yuuzhan Vong cruiser, with each target evenly spaced around the enemy ship, so no one void could capture more than one missile. The gravitic anomaly that had dragged the New Republic ships prematurely from hyperspace evaporated as the Dovin Basals broke off to stop the incoming missiles and laser fire. Whether because the assault just overwhelmed the available Dovin Basals, or the creatures had exhausted themselves creating the interdiction field, they failed to intercept all the lasers and missiles. Proton torpedoes pulverized Yorick coral hull panels. Turbo lasers melted plasma spines and scored long furrows in the ship's hull. More than one spine broke off and floated free in space. The Yuuzhan Vong cruiser fired back with its plasma cannons. Red-gold gouts of energy slammed into the Ralroost's shields, but they held. The sensor officer glanced at the admiral. First, the Yuuzhan Vong cruiser is pulling back. Its skips are diving for atmosphere. A round of cheers greeted the news. The Crefe cut it off with a slash of his hand.
Communications, get me the Impervious.
Online, Admiral.
This is Admiral Crefe. Senator Eligos, are you still in charge of my shuttle?
I am, Admiral. Would you like it back now?
I would, yes. Please, bring it aboard and have your fighters recover through my dorsal recovery bay. The freighters can form up on us, and we will escort you away from here.
Prefe smiled.
Provided your fact-finding mission is over.
Oh, now it is, Admiral.
The Kamasi sighed.
And the Senate is not going to like this report at all.
That hardly surprises me, Senator.
The Bothan Admiral's violet eyes narrowed.
And it's all the more reason we make for Coruscant as fast as we can.
Gavin Darklighter knew he was engaged in one of the most difficult battles he'd ever faced. And everything he had learned on the trip into Coruscant had convinced him it was a battle that Rogue Squadron and the New Republic could not afford to lose. Gavin, Leia Organa Solo, Admiral Traist Kreefe, and Senator Atla had been summoned to a meeting of Chief of State Boris Kfalia's advisory council to report on what they had found. It seemed clear to Gavin from the smug look on Kfalia's face and the superior airs his Confederates were projecting that they either had no clue about what was going on in the Rim, which simply wasn't possible, or were choosing not to let it deflect them from whatever schemes and plans they had in mind. The Kamasi senator stood in the center of the arc described by the council's table and spread his arms.
You now have heard the substance of what I will report to the Senate. There is no doubt that these Yuuzhang Vong have come to this galaxy with conquest on their agenda.
Nyuk Nyuv, the senator from Sullust, clucked deep in his throat for a moment.
If this is true, a lesson was taught them at Dantooine, wasn't it? You drove a cruiser off and escaped, did you not?
Elagos nodded slowly.
We did that, yes. It seems, however, you are ignoring the evidence of Belkaden, that they have come and set up factories to produce war material. You ignore their operation on Vimeol, which we know about only because the students there were evacuated to Agamar and arrived when we did. You also greatly discount the sacrifices we paid to save as many people as we did. Rogue Squadron has lost 2/3 of the pilots it had 2 months ago. Over 50 other pilots and troopers lost their lives. The Yuuzhang Vong killed countless people on Dubrillion, and the refugees on Dantooine suffered 50% casualties.
Boris Kfalia shook his head and smoothed the cream-colored fur at the back of his neck.
We acknowledge the sacrifices of Colonel Darklighter's command.
Gavin glanced at Admiral Kreefe and caught the all but imperceptible nod that was his signal. Raising his head slowly, Gavin stared straight into Failure's eyes. If you value our effort, Chief Kfalia, then I have to wonder why you are working so hard to deceive me, to deceive the rest of the New Republic's military. Kfalia blinked, and the fur on the back of his neck rose.
You will be forgiven that insubordinate outburst, Colonel. You are clearly overwrought.
Gavin stood slowly. He kept his voice even despite the anger and disgust boiling inside of him.
Chief Kfalia, in here we know the truth.
The only reason the Kharuska fire was at Agamar is because Captain Rimson is from Agamar, and he diverted from his assigned patrol.
In speaking to his family on Agamar, he learned of Leia's visit there. He returned home to assess the situation and was able to travel with Admiral Kreefe to save us. If he had not been there, none of us would be here.
You have misinterpreted,
Gavin cut him off with the sharp chop of a hand through the air. I'm not finished.
Your career most assuredly can be, Colonel.
Kfalia's ears flattened back against his skull.
Are you resigning, effective immediately?
Admiral Kreefe snapped off a quick comment in Bothan that brought Kfalia's head around as if he'd been punched. The Chief of State snarled a comment in return. Admiral Kreefe came smoothly to his feet.
Oh, I dare, cousin, speak to you in that manner, because you have grossly overstepped your bounds in this. Did you expect we would not know of sightings of Yuuzhang Vong all over the galaxy?
The Admiral slowly shook his head.
There are a million ways to know.
Boris Kfalia snorted, as if what he had been told was inconsequential.
Even if these worlds are involved with the Yuuzhan Vong invasion, and you have no proof they are, the prosecution of the war against the Yuuzhan Vong is a matter for us to determine.
Gavin shook his head. Not when it is our lives on the line.
Again, Colonel Darklighter, are you quoting from a resignation letter?
Treyas Crefay stepped forward between Gavin and Elagos.
Beware accepting his resignation, cousin. Because if he goes, so do I. So will the New Republic's military. You're talking mutiny. I'm talking the only thing that makes sense.
Crefay tapped himself on his chest.
My mandate is to keep people safe, and the Yuuzhan Vong are a direct threat to their safety. Your lack of response to that threat would be criminal. So, would I take the New Republic's military and draw it off into, say, the unknown regions, and carve out my own little empire? Yes. I would prepare it as a haven for those who flee the New Republic as it falls to the Yuuzhan Vong.
Fuo, the Quarren, uncurled his mouth tentacles.
If you feel this way, Admiral, would you not be better off staging a revolt and unseating us?
No, because I am not a politician.
He shook his head.
I cannot say I would not back someone else in toppling an ineffective government, however.
Crefay twisted to his left and waved a hand at Leia. She sat forward and let a feral grin blossom on her face. Telia stood and folded his arms across his chest.
So, this is it, then, Leia. You so hate being out of power that you have seduced Admiral Crefay into backing you in a revolt?
Leia laughed, quickly and politely, then came up out of her chair with a fluid grace that reminded Gavin of a Tel'Pari, stretching languidly. Is that what you want, Chief Felia? Do you want to be remembered as the one who led the New Republic to such ruin that I had to rescue it again? Her voice came low enough that even Gavin had to strain to hear her. As her words poured into his ears, Felia's facial expression changed. It went from a look of triumph to one of sour disappointment, then resignation. He leaned forward, posting himself up on his arms.
How is it that you wish to play this, then?
Leia smiled carefully. First, you will cede control of military operations to the military. There will be no political micromanagement of the war. What they want, they get.
Of course.
Second, you will coordinate relief supplies and material to handle the incoming refugees. Agamar is already overstressed, and people will be fleeing further coreward as the Yuuzhan Vong advance. Lastly, you will allow Senator Atla to make his report to the full Senate, with complete coverage of it to go out over the media. Failure's violet eyes flashed with fire.
We will work up the text of the report together. Yes?
Elagos nodded.
I find that acceptable.
Good. Leia stepped forward and offered Felia her hand.
I'd forgotten what it was like to work with you.
Be assured, I had not.
Felia shook Leia's hand, but the guarded expression on her face confirmed that she was thinking what Gavin could feel in his bones. Felia's compliance now was not guaranteed to continue in the future.
In the short term, we get what we need. But that won't always be so.
If he can take advantage, he will. Gavin made his way back to Rogue Squadron headquarters and stalked through darkened hallways. Admiral Crefay agreed that no alert would go out until noon the next day, allowing the warriors, who would be on the front lines, a lazy morning before they committed their lives to the bloody grind of war. The only real bright spot in the whole disaster of the retreat from Dubrillion had been Jaina Solo's joining the squadron. Gavin had asked Leia if her daughter might stay on with the unit, and permission had been granted cautiously. Jaina immediately moved into the squadron barracks, settling in as if she'd belonged there all along. And flying the way she does, there's little doubt she will remain with us for a long time. Gavin opened the door to his office. Two men looked up from where they had seated themselves in the easy chairs.
On the table before them sat three tumblers, two of which had been filled from the decanter of Karelian whiskey Gavin kept hidden in the bottom drawer of his desk. The two men smiled at him, and he began to laugh. Gavin poured himself a glass of whiskey. What are you two doing here? We heard from various sources that you're going to be going to war. Wedge Antilles raised his glass. We're too old to fly, but not to help out. You need us, you've got us. You may want to reconsider that offer. This isn't going to be pretty at all. Tycho Selku shook his head. War never is, Gavin. Let's just hope together we can make it very short. Jason Solo turned from where he had been leaning on the balcony railing and faced his little brother. Couldn't sleep? Anakin shook his head as he emerged on the Solo's balcony.
Nightmares.
Of?
Dantooine.
Anakin rubbed sleep sand from his eyes.
I keep having this dream where I'm cutting down reptoids right and left, but it's never enough. They still overrun the refugee camp. When we get there, because you're in the dream too, we find a lot of dead people. Chewie and Dad and Mom are among them.
Jason sighed. That's a nasty one. I'm having nightmares too, Anakin. Nightmares of Dantooine.
Like mine?
Sort of. I'm there like you, killing and killing and killing. I'm a gatekeeper. The reptoids really need to get to the other side of the gate, and I'm only letting them through in pieces.
That's what you had to do.
Did I? Jason scratched at the back of his neck.
What we did wasn't noble. It was just butchery.
They were beasts, and we just slaughtered them. Anakin grabbed hold of Jason's wrist.
But if you didn't kill them, they would have killed lots more refugees.
Jason turned.
And was saving those refugees all that special? Does this make them better people than those who died? Will they learn from this experience and make the universe a better place?
What I do know is that we kept some of them alive. That's enough for me.
I know.
Jason lowered his voice to a whisper.
Look, Anakin, you did wonderfully on Dantooine. You learned a lot. You took good care of Mara. You kept her alive under very difficult circumstances. You really are a hero because of all that and everything you did to fend off the reptoids. I'm not trying to take anything away from you or what you did. I want you to understand that.
Okay. Anakin folded his arms across his chest.
What about you? That's just it. I don't know.
Jason pressed his fingertips to his temples.
I thought that going off on my own would be the key to getting closer to the Force. But then I saw the slaves and wished I could act. It was necessary to act to help save you and Mara on Dantooine. It's as if I'm walking around in a circle, circling around the goal I want. Sometimes it seems as if I need to be alone, and other times that I'm thrust into the heroic mold that has shaped and consumed Uncle Luke. I know there are other approaches, but I don't know if they are right for me.
Anakin frowned for a moment.
On Dantooine, when Mara made me stop using the Force like a crutch, I realized I was using the Force too much.
Uncle Luke uses it like an advisor or sometimes a power source. Others use it like a vibroblade, some like an opinion poll, and yet others like a whole variety of tools.
I thought a lot about all that, and I guess I chose to follow in Uncle Luke's footsteps.
That's not an easy path.
Easy isn't for Jedi,
Anakin smiled.
Of course, trying to find your own path is much more difficult. Maybe what you have to do is to walk a bit on the other paths and see how you can weave bits and pieces of them together.
Anakin's comment found echoes in Luke's admonishment that Jason was still young and lacking in experience.
Perhaps I do need to explore more of the Jedi ways and get to know myself better.
He realized that while he was more judicious in his use of the Force than Anakin, he didn't really know how he would function without it.
Can I truly discover how to integrate myself with the Force if I do not know who I am without it?
Jason reached out and tousled his brother's hair. Look, one thing. No matter what I think about what we did at Dantooine, I was proud to have you at my side. I don't know what I'll be in the future, Anakin, but I know you'll be a great Jedi Knight. I have confidence that you will succeed no matter what life throws at you. Anakin sharpened his eyes. Are you really Jason? Or some Yu Zhang Vong in an Ooglyph masker? So, there I was, feeling like I was floating. And I was thinking to myself, so, this is what it's like to die a Jedi and fade from existence, like my grandfather. A sheepishly grinning Corrin Horn toweled back off himself. Then I noticed that despite the numbness, I still had a touch of pain from my hand. I also realized I was being bumped around a bit, which didn't strike me as appropriate for a disembodied spirit. But I couldn't open my eyes, so I hung in for the ride. Luke shook his head. Which is when you discovered that Ganner had returned and was lifting you above the slash rats and out of the shell. Corrin nodded. Yes. Against my orders, he had Trista bring the dalliance around. They lazed the top off the big shell, and hanging from the landing ramp, Ganner pulled me up. If he hadn't... Corrin's wife, Mirax, tossed him a robe from the hospital room's small wardrobe. If Ganner hadn't, he'd be running from me. It's also a good thing they stuck you in the back to tank on the dalliance. That venom would have killed you otherwise. Sure, but imagine their surprise if it hadn't worked. Corrin gave a last rub of his hair with the towel. They put me in, then only find torn-up clothes. Mirax arched an eyebrow at her husband. And that is funny. How?
I would have been amused.
The dead apparently find almost anything entertaining.
Shedao Shai, the Yu Zhang Vong commander, stood at the top of the stairway leading down into the Grishal on the hill. What he saw would have sickened him, but he would give no sign of weakness to those beneath him. On the floor, they had larval gritcha excreting shell material to patch over the breaches that had permitted the sand vipers to enter the shell and devour two Yu Zhang Vong warriors.
Two warriors from my family.
Che Dao Shai began a slow, deliberate descent of the steps. He kept his pace measured and watched to see whether those below kept at their tasks or chose to look up at him as he descended. Those who did not look were feigning disinterest, which meant they hid their ambition. Whereas those who watched from the first instance were fawning morons, thinking their advancement would come through means other than valor and success in combat. Those who steal glances as they work, these are the ones who are naturally curious, but respectful and attentive to duty. He noted which they were, then selected from among them one who had chosen to oversee the Nadin as it slowly effaced any trace of the interlopers who had desecrated the Grishal. He summoned his chosen one with a single wave of a crooked finger. The warrior scooped up the Nadin, holding the slimy creature in both hands despite the numbing stings its cilia could deliver. He set it down again on the Grishal floor, letting it attack a scarlet smear, then dropped to one knee before his master. Che Dao Shai looked down at him.
Krag Lal, I would have you tell me what happened here.
As I am able, Commander.
The warrior stood and turned to gesture at the racks.
I believe two of the humans on this world were being kept in the embrace of pain. Two came to freedom.
The cuts on the embrace, the floor, and on the relics of your kinsmen lead me to believe these two were of the Jedi. In the battling, I believe Nyerashai was slain first. His skull has carbon scoring inside an eye socket. Draneshai hurt his foe badly, but scoring on the bones of his hip joint suggests he was greatly hurt in return. I found no evidence of a killing stroke to his remains. Kragval's voice shrank. Of the remains we have recovered, that is. Fury began to build in Shedao Shai, but he kept it in check. What Kragval reported was much the substance of the preliminary report he had been given while in transit from Dantooine. His battles there and at Dubrillion had begun to give him a measure of his enemies. I almost thought them worthy foes. But what he learned of their conduct on Bimeo confirmed for him that they were beyond redemption.
This Jedi who left his blood here, what of his remains?
Krag lowered his eyes to the floor. Of him we have no remains. There is blood evidence that he may have been lifted from here and taken away.
Shedao Shai's hands curled into fists. You tell me they recovered the body of their fallen, and yet left ours to be carrion for vermin. This I fear, Commander.
Shedao Shai snarled, raising his fist.
This is the fault of Nom Anur, that God's cursed whelp of a machine.
Nom Anur had infiltrated the New Republic and had sent back information about the enemies the Yuuzhan Vong would face here. But he had not included all he should have. Moreover, he had made a bid for power, allowing his political faction to launch a strike at Dubrillion and Belkaten.
Now my kinsmen have paid for his deficiencies with their lives.
The Yuuzhan Vong commander kept his voice even, despite the words coming through clenched teeth.
And of Monde Shai?
Kragval sank to both knees and prostrated himself at the base of the stairs.
There is evidence, Commander, that a group of humans found the cave where he had been waiting. They... very queer to say it, Master.
Tremors ran through Shedao Shai's body, but he kept them out of his voice.
Their crimes are not yours, Kragval. They disturbed his rest, Master.
The Yuuzhan Vong commander turned his face away, the image of his grandfather's remains being pawed by these soft humans, of all evidence of his passing being destroyed. It was too much. It soured Shedao Shai's breath and thickened his saliva. Monge Shai had, 50 years ago, been part of a team to venture forth from their world ships to this new galaxy. He had not returned with the others, remaining behind on Bimeo to report to them via Vilips until the range proved too great. His sacrifice had brought honor to Domain Shai, and Shedao had hoped his cousins could heap more glory upon the family by recovering the remains.
They failed, and the enemy has taken his relics. They taunt us with their audacity.
Shedao Shai gestured back toward the Minchul village to the west.
The vermin destroyed the slaves?
It appears so, Master.
And their remains were not recovered by the Jedi?
No, Master.
Shedao Shai crouched above the Nadin, twitching its way across the bloody streak the Jedi had left on the floor. He watched it sucking up the blood, then looked past the creature at Kragval.
At the world they called Dantooine, they did not recover their dead. These people have no sense of what is proper or honorable. That they remove this Jedi tells me something valuable.
Kragval, his head held low, glanced at Shedao Shai.
What does it tell you, Master? It tells me this Jedi is yet alive.
Shedao Shai plucked the plump Nadin from the floor and held it up. On its belly, countless cilia glistened within blood-stained mucus. Shedao Shai leaned forward and bit deeply into the Nadin, tasting
the blood, feeling the stings. He tore flesh from the creature and swallowed, paying no mind to the cool sensation of fluid running down over his chin.
This Jedi lives, and I will again taste his blood as he dies.
Other titles in the Star Wars series available on audio from Random House Audiobooks are Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, The New Jedi Order, Vector Prime, Dark Tide Onslaught is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2000. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music master production, copyright 2000, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House Audio Books presentation. All rights reserved.